In that sublime era, industry will glorify the good. Perceiving our understanding, goodwill and veneration for the divine laws, the Lord will, at least in part, offer us a solution to the technical problem of securing the atmosphere's nitrogen. Let us teach our brothers and sisters that life is not to be comprised of incessant robbery, where plants are made to damage the soil, where animals exterminate plants and where people murder animals. Rather, life is an activity of divine sharing and generous cooperation, and we cannot disrupt it without causing serious damage to our own position as responsible and evolved creatures. Let us not condemn. Let us always be of use. We were all deeply impressed. Anisato fell silent and sympathetically watched the nearby animals and birds, as if he was sending deep thoughts of love to them. Then he closed the holy book with these words: "We notice in Paul's letter that the creation anxiously awaits the cooperation of the incarnate children of God. We agree that the creatures of the lower kingdoms have borne their weight of great iniquities. Let us continue to help them, but let us not get lost in vain contentions. Humans are waiting for our spiritual manifestation also. In this way, let us help everyone in the chapter of great understanding." Before the meeting, spiritual preparations for the meeting were busy and complex. We returned to Doña Isabel's residence a little before 6 p.m. and the room was already filled with busy workers. I found some of the activities unusual, so I asked our guide a few questions, which he kindly answered. Carrying out an effective spiritual work session is no simple thing. Whenever there are incarnate spirits devotedly and cheerfully involved in their labor, devoid of worries, unhealthy experiences or unreasonable apprehensions, we can set vast resources in motion to achieve success. Of course, we cannot take part in childish activities in this respect. Those who don't wish to perform their obligations with due seriousness will obviously encounter spirits that are not serious, because physical death does not mean automatic renewal for those who have not endeavored to renew themselves. Wherever frivolous souls are gathered, the frivolousness will be. In Isabel's case, however, we are always ready and willing to help her spiritually constructive efforts. In all areas of evolution, it's natural that the sincere and effective worker should receive increasingly ample resources. Wherever activity for the good is found, a higher order of spiritual cooperation will be found there. Our kindly friend fell silent. I continued to observe the laborious activities of some of the brothers and sisters as they were dividing the room in an unusual way by utilizing long fluidic bands of some sort. Anisato rescued me from my perplexity. "These friends are performing the work of setting up safeguards around the area. A few dozen sufferers will be brought in for tonight's work, and it is essential to limit the area of their influence in this family temple. That is why our fellow spirits are preparing the necessary magnetic divisions." I was impressed at noticing that they were magnetizing the aphid cell. However, our instructor kindly informed me, "Don't be too impressed, Andre. In our line of work, magnetism is the predominant force and we are compelled to make widespread use of it." And he concluded, "Even the priests of ancient Egypt were aware of the fact that to achieve certain effects it was essential to impregnate the atmosphere with spiritual elements, saturating it with the positive forces of their will. To disseminate the light of the gospel to discarnates, varied and complex provisions are necessary, without which everything would merely result in more disturbances. This center is tiny if considered from the material point of view, but it has great meaning for us. We must be vigilant, let's not forget that." While the spiritual preparation continued at full steam, Doña Isabel and Jonina were also taking care of various arrangements for the meeting. They went over the entire area with brooms and feather dusters. Then they covered the table with a snow-white tablecloth and brought in small vessels of pure water. At an order from one of the superiors of the church home, the guards spread out round it. The remarkable supervision of the benefactors was apparent in the smallest details. Everything displayed order, service and simplicity. Shortly after 6 o'clock, the needy began to arrive from a sphere invisible to the ordinary human. If regular people were granted a glimpse, however slight, of this group of disturbed and suffering discarnate spirits, they would undoubtedly change their attitudes in their everyday lives. In this respect, we should likewise include the majority of spiritists, who regularly attend instructional meetings but who show no motivation for self-education. They have a vague idea of the spirit world but continue to be concerned with minding their habitual selfishness. The panorama of individual rectification after physical death is so extensive and varied that I lack the words to explain my immense surprise. Those skeletal faces aroused everyone's compassion. Disturbed spirits were coming into the room in small groups, accompanied by their fraternal guides. They looked like corpses resurrected from their deathbeds. Some of them had a hard time moving. This was a veritable gathering of the lame and maimed, according to gospel symbolism. Most of them, explained Anicetto, are discouraged and embittered brothers and sisters who want renewal but do not know how to begin. Only sufferers of that sort can come here because Isidora and Isabel's family sanctuary is not equipped to receive intentionally wicked spirits. Each center has its own special purpose. Indeed, the recent arrivals had deep anguish imprinted on their faces. There was a large number of sobbing women. It was truly a disturbing scene. A few spirits held their hands to their bellies or were pressing down on wounded areas. Many were wearing bandages and dressings. A lot of them, said Anicetto, have yet to face the realities of corporeal death. And by and large, they are all slaves to the idea of illness. There are people, and you, as doctors, used to know a lot of them, who actually take pleasure in cultivating illness. They enjoy detailed diagnoses, monitor with indescribable passion the appearance of signs of death in their bodies, and study theories regarding their illnesses very carefully but without taking such care in analyzing their daily obligations. And when they can't find what they're looking for in books, they count on lengthy attention from their doctors, the scrupulous care of nurses, and long lectures concerning their illnesses, to which they are willing prisoners. After discarnating, it is far more difficult for them to understand the truth, since they hold to their dominant ideas. Sometimes, deep down, they are good souls who are dedicated to their kin and are useful in the restricted area of understanding where they have taken refuge, but nevertheless, they have been bogged down in mental contamination for many centuries. And with a different expression, he reflected, it takes all of us ages to break out of the old shell of individualism. The vision of universality carries a high price tag and we are rent always willing to pay it. We don't want to renounce our old tastes and we run from making praiseworthy sacrifices. Under such circumstances, the world that prevails for the discarnate soul for a long time is the personal kingdom of our lower creations. Thus, those who have cultivated illness have submitted themselves to this empire. While incarnate, it is only logical that we offer every measure of assistance to our physical body, which functions as a sacred vessel. But fixing one's health, while at the same time contaminating one's mind, are two essentially contradictory approaches. His talk was wonderfully instructive, however. The growing number of needy spirits was calling for our help. Many were weeping quietly, others were moaning more loudly. Finally, Anicetto announced, "Let's get to work. For us spirit workers, our labor has already begun. The prayer and efforts of our incarnate fellow spirits represent the boundary for this meeting of assistance and illumination in Jesus Christ." Assistance. The picture of suffering unfolding before our eyes reminded me of the environment in the chambers of rectification. Anicetto joined Isidora and said resolutely, "Let's get to work. Let's apply some energizing passes." "But," I objected, "am I ready for it?" "Why not?" asked my instructor in a firm voice. "Every skill and specialty in the world involving areas of service consists in developing our goodwill. A sincere desire to cooperate and a notion of the responsibility involved are enough for us to begin any new task successfully." Such affirmations were encouraging. I remembered Narcisa, dedicated sister of the unfortunate, who had remained in Nosola, almost never resting, like a prisoner of sacrifice. It seemed as though I could still hear her loving, sisterly voice, "Andre, my friend, as far as possible, never neglect helping those who suffer. As you stand at your patient's feet, remember that the best medicine is the renewal of hope. If you encounter the failed and hopeless, speak to them of the divine opportunity of the future. If someday you are hounded by devious and criminal spirits, don't offer them words of cursing. Encourage, edify, educate, and awaken, without harming those who still sleep. God does wonders through deeds of goodwill." With no further ado, I got down to work. Anaisatu assigned a group of 6 spirit patients to me, stressing, "Use all your abilities, Andre. With our collaboration, the friends who work in this house will be able to attend to other, more pressing, responsibilities. The most insignificant workers for the good rejoice at the opportunity of helping out in ordinary struggles. They build themselves up in the Lord Jesus because not one of their deeds gets lost in time and space." At the moment, I was being called upon to offer real aid. I did not resort to any of my scientific methods or rely only on the techniques of official medicine, with which I had been associated in the world. Instead, I remembered the humble and simple Narcissa in the chambers of rectification, a devoted and caring nurse who achieved much more with love than with medication. I approached a deeply disheartened woman, remembering the example of my benevolent friend in Nosolar and knowing that I should help not just by using resolution and energy, but also tenderness and understanding. "My sister," I said, trying to gain her trust, "let's begin with some energizing passes." "Oh. Oh," answered the woman. "I can't see. I can't see anything. Oh, the trichoma. What a wretch I am. And they talk to me about death, about a different life. How can I get my sight back? I want to see again, I want to see." "Now just compose yourself," I replied, feeling encouraged. "Don't you trust in the power of Jesus? He still heals the blind, lights our pathway, guides our steps." Only later on did I remember that, at that moment, I had forgotten all about my unwholesome curiosity. I didn't even think about the impression that the trachoma had left on that spirit organism, nor was I concerned about the proper scientific expression of the phenomenon. All I saw in front of me was a suffering and needy sister. And as I became more and more willing to practice fraternal love, a different clarity began to illuminate and warm my face. I remembered the divine influence of Jesus and began the relieving passes over the poor woman's eyes, noticing that an enormous layer of darkness was weighing on her face. I said encouraging things to her. I tied the best essence of my intentions to them and concentrated my magnetic aid abilities on that disturbed area. Within a few seconds, the woman cried out in astonishment. "I can see! I can see!" she exclaimed, between fear and joy. "God is great! God is great!" And kneeling in an instinctive display of thanks, she asked me, "Who are you, emissary of the good?" I was overcome by a profound emotion that I could not suppress. The goodness of the Eternal One confounded me. Who was I to heal anyone? But the joy of that spirit, freed from darkness, was evidence for an event that I did not want to believe. The light of that gift revealed more strongly the dark depths of my own imperfections. The tears rolled down my cheeks, and I was unable to hold them back in the hidden recesses of my heart. While the spirit patient broke down in tears of praise, I too was absorbed in a wave of new thoughts. The incident had amazed me. I wanted to help the next patient. Nevertheless, I was caught up in an odd inner fascination. Anaisatu, however, approached me politely and said in a low voice, "Andre, too much regard for results can jeopardize the worker. On occasions like this, vanity usually awakens within us and makes us forget the Lord. Don't forget that all good comes from Him. He is the light of our hearts. We are His instruments in the tasks of love. The faithful servant is not the one who is amazed by the results, nor the one who gets wrapped up in contemplating them, but the one who fulfills the Lord's divine will and moves on." Those words couldn't have been more meaningful. Our kindly mentor returned to his work along with other brothers and sisters, and in appreciation for his loving advice, I turned to the grateful woman and emphasized, "My friend, thank Jesus, not me. I'm merely an obscure servant. Furthermore, don't be too impressed with being able to see outward things. Turn your visual power inward so that you can consecrate the sublime gift of sight to the Lord of life." I noticed that she was taken aback by my words, which perhaps seemed inappropriate and transcendental, but firm again in the understanding of my duty, I approached the next patient. He was an unfortunate brother who had died in Gamboa, a victim of cancer. His entire facial area looked horrible. I applied energizing passes while ministering encouraging thoughts and words, and I noticed that the poor man began to feel considerably better. I promised I would help him check into a spirit home for treatment, recommending that he prepare his mental life to receive such a favorable benefit when the appropriate time came. Next, I attended two ex-tuberculosis patients from Encantado, and then a woman who had discarnated in Piedade as a result of a malignant tumor. Then, a young man from malaria registered who had passed away from shock during surgery. None of these last four, however, showed any signs of relief. Their organic ailments and the accompanying psychic phenomena of suffering persisted. When I had finished my allotted task, I joined Anicetto and Vicente, who were waiting for me in a corner of the room. "The activities of assistance," Anicetto explained solicitously, "always proceed just as you have observed here. Some feel that they are healed, while others say they've at least improved, but most seem to continue unreceptive to the aid they have received. What should interest us, however, is the sowing of the good. The germination, growth, blossom and fruit belong to the Lord." Vicente seemed deeply impressed and remarked, "The number of disturbed spirits is frightening. All the way from Nosala to the earth, we have seen them at varying degrees of imbalance." Anicetto smiled and said in a serious tone, "We owe the overwhelming percentage of such afflictions to the lack of proper religious education. But I'm not referring to the kind that comes from a priest or the mouth of one person to the ears of another. I'm referring to the inner and profound religious education that people systematically deny themselves. A sickly mind." As he continued watching and working, Anicetto remarked, "Not only ill discarnates come here, notice the incarnate ones, as well. Between our circle and the group of incarnates, the percentage of workers in relation to the number of the sick and needy is about the same." Nodding toward a well-dressed and elegant gentleman, who was conversing with Mr. Bent, the instructor for that group, he added, "Look at that friend, surrounded in darkness, conversing with our sister Isabel's husband. Listen to what he's saying and then judge for yourselves." Indeed, the gentleman was surrounded by small clouds, mainly around his head. I focused my attention on him and could hear him distinctly. "For a long time," he affirmed emphatically, "I have been going to spiritist meetings looking for something that might satisfy me. However," and he smiled ironically, "either I'm unhappier than others or we're dealing with a worldwide deception." Noticing his incarnate guide's respectful attitude, he continued proudly, "I have studied a great deal and cannot disregard a sieve of strict reason. I have read a lot of books about human survival after death, but I have never obtained any proof of it. Spiritism is full of alluring theses, but the subject still raises many questions. Kardec's work undeniably shows extraordinary philosophical insight, but we also find a great many new perspectives in Richet. Metapsychics has corrected many flights of imagination and has offered for public analysis more profound observations about the unknown powers of the human species. In examining these scientific truths, the dimensions of mediumship have been reduced. We need a movement of rationalization, adjusting the phenomena to appropriate criteria. Nevertheless, my dear Bent, we live in an arena of subtle mystification that is far removed from precise demonstration." Very calm and secure in his faith, Bentz interrupted, "Well, Dr. Feidel is, I will agree that spiritism should not try to avoid honest speculation. However, I believe that the doctrine is a collection of sublime truths, which are directed primarily to the human heart. It is impossible to examine their divine grandeur with our imperfect faculties of observation or to gather their pure waters with the soiled vessel of our mind, which has been contaminated by the errors of many millennia. Furthermore, we have learned that the revelation of divine order is not the mechanical workings of the law of least effort. Let's remember that the Master's gospel mission was preceded by many centuries of human effort. Before Christians died in the Roman arenas of martyrdom, how many of Jesus' precursors were sacrificed? First, we must build the receptacle, then, we will receive the blessing. The Bible, the sacred book of Christians, is an encounter with human experience, filled with sweat and tears, intimately portrayed in the Old Testament, with the heavenly, sublime and pure response in the Gospel of our Lord. Drive Fidelis smiled vaguely, revealing something halfway between irony and offended vanity. Bentz, however, didn't miss the opportunity and continued, "TF all the serious work of human life is something sacred in our sight, then what about the expression of the divine in planetary work? And regarding the essentiality of labor in organizing the world, what would become of us if a handful of spirit friends and scholars suddenly transported us to a broad vision of more highly evolved orbs, taking us to them simply because of their holy esteem for us as individuals? Would we be prepared for the radical change? Would we know what life on a higher orb would be like? Will we have worked enough to understand the divine designs? And what about the Earth? And our millenary debt to the planet that has borne our imperfections? How can we dwell in the higher realms without draining the swamps that lie below?" These considerations become crucial for examining an argument such as yours because we cannot accurately judge the abundant currents of a voluminous river if we see only the drops collected in the thimble of our limitations. The obstinate scholar looked even more ironic and retorted, "You speak as a man of faith, whereas my efforts are directed toward reason and science. I wish to refer to the inevitable inferences of free research, to the media mystic frauds down through time. You are aware that many scientists have examined the frauds involving mediumship in Europe and America. Well, what can you expect of a doctrine entrusted to continental deceivers?" Bentz replied, very serenely and thoughtfully, "Oat. You are mistaken, my friend. We would be committing a grave error if we placed all doctrinal responsibility on mediums. Mediums are simple co-workers in the work of spiritualization. They will all have to answer for what they have done with their abilities, just as we ourselves will be compelled to settle our accounts someday. We mustn't commit the absurdity of attributing the concentration of all divine truths to the minds of only certain individuals who are candidates for new sects of worship. The Spiritist doctrine, Drive Fidelis, is a sublime and pure fountain, inaccessible to the individualistic cravings of any one of us, a fountain from which all individuals must drink the water of their own renewal. As for media mystic frauds, you must realize that so-called scientific infallibility has sought to convert the noblest mediums into nervous wrecks or into simple laboratory guinea pigs. Researchers, currently labeled metapsychics, are strange tillers who plow the fields of service without producing anything fundamentally useful. They bend over the ground, count the grains of sand and invasive worms, determine the degree of heat and study the longitude. They observe climatic tendencies and note atmospheric variations, but to the great surprise of sincere workers, they disregard the seed. Dr. Fidelis stopped smiling and commented, "We shall see, we shall see. I am waiting for a message from my loved ones to provide me with an unmistakable sign of survival after death." Anisotope touched us lightly and said, "Have you noticed how this man displays a contaminated mind? He is one of those curious, ill incarnates. He has a broad education, but nevertheless, since his sentiments have been poisoned, everything that comes into his mind partakes of this general toxicity. He is a superficial researcher, as are many people. He expects everything from others. He examines his fellows, but doesn't examine himself. He wants divine realization without making a human effort. He expects grace for himself, yet makes demands on others, he wants to reap the wheat of truth without participating in the sowing, he hopes for peace of mind through faith without taking part in constructive work, he values science without consulting his conscience, he prefers ease without accepting responsibility, and living in the whirlwind of continual social drinking, clinging to lower interests and the utmost satisfaction of the physical senses, he expects to receive messages from spirits. We were amazed by these interesting conclusions. Vicente was again deeply impressed and asked, "What does this man want after all?" Aniceto smiled and replied, "He himself would find that very difficult to answer. For us, Vicente, Dr. Fidelis is one of those sickly persons who have not yet decided to look for relief because of their excessive attachment to the physical senses. Continuing to learn." According to Aniceto, there was still more than an hour until the beginning of the gospel lecture, which, for the incarnates in attendance, was Mr. Bent's responsibility. However, the activity on the spirit plane had already become very intense. To the human eye, 35 flesh and blood persons were gathered there, but on our plane the number of needy spirits was more than 200, because the group was now augmented by several spirits who comprised the troublemaking entourage of the majority of the learners gathered there. A special area had been set aside for them. It seemed to me that it entailed increased security measures due to the fact that these spirits were there without the prior approval of the spirit guides working the public streets but had been more or less obligated to come because they were connected to the ones who were intentionally seeking spiritual help. The activity was extensive and there was little time for mere observation. All the workers of the house remained at their posts, paying the closest attention possible. I noticed that on one corner of the large table there were numerous requests for receituarius and assistance. A wide variety of names were listed there. Many people had asked for medical advice, guidance, assistance and passes. Four spirit physicians here hard at work, and assisting their humanitarian efforts. 40 direct workers were coming and going, collecting information and adding to details. We approached a large number of papers with names on them, and while I curiously examined them, Aniceto explained, "These are requests by people who say they are in need of immediate support and help. Do they actually receive everything they ask for?" asked Vicente. "They receive what they need. Many ask for their bodies to be healed, but we have to consider to what extent this might be useful for them according to their individual desires. Others request guidance of various types, obliging us to balance our work so as not to hinder individual freedom. Earthly existence is an active spiritual preparation course and there is almost never a lack of lazy students in the school, who waste time instead of making the most of it, and who are anxious for false achievements that require the least amount of effort. That is why in the area of guidance the majority of the requests go unheeded. The request for therapy to maintain physical health by those who are actually interested in spiritual help is always justified. Nevertheless, as far as advice for daily living is concerned, we have to be very cautious regarding the requests of those who intentionally disregard the obligation of Christian conduct. The gospel is filled with sacred spiritual instructions, and disciples, at least before their own conscience, should consider themselves obliged to become familiar with them." Aniceto paused briefly and changed his tone of voice, as if to accentuate his words more strongly. "You may of course object and say that every question demands an answer and every request deserves a solution, however, in the case of answering certain requests, we must often resort to silence. How are we to recommend humility to those who preach it to others? How are we to teach patience to those who suggest it to others, and how are we to recommend the balm of work to those who are already able to condemn the laziness of others? Wouldn't that go against common sense? To read the rules of life to the blind and uneducated is a worthy task, but wouldn't repeating them to those who are already fully informed be underestimating the value of our time? Within the various denominations of Christianity, no soul receives news about Jesus for no apparent reason. So if every edifying work condition expresses the individual's commitment, then all knowledge of Christ implies responsibility. All disciples of the Master, therefore, have the duty to examine their conscience and bestow upon it insights based on gospel precepts. Vicente listened with great interest and remarked, "Nevertheless, one should venture to remember the ones who frivolously make such requests."